Docket at this point. We have one case set on the 230 docket. Just a moment, I'll get that in front of me. It is people in the interest of AD and concerning CR. While council are setting up, let me briefly review the ground rules for you in just the event you've not argued here. This case is set for 15 minutes per side. The appellant may reserve what other part of the 15 minutes you wish for your argument. You'll be guided by a lighting system which works as follows. When the green light comes on, your time begins. When 10 minutes have expired, the amber light will come on. And when your full 15 minutes have expired, the red light will come on. The timer on the podium counts backward from 15, so you'll know how much time you have left. We've read the briefs in your cases. We're, in this case, we're familiar with the facts as you set them forth. So to the extent you want to proceed directly to your legal argument, that's fine with us. We would like you to stay close to the podium, please, because we're recording your arguments. We find it helpful occasionally to go back and listen to the arguments again. And if you stray from the podium, the microphone will not pick up your voice well. Feel free to adjust the podium by the use of a toggle switch up there. It goes up and down. Also be advised that your arguments are available over the internet within a day or two after today's argument. So if you have information that you don't wish to be disseminated to the public, be guided accordingly. Finally, please turn off any cell phones or other electronic devices that have the ability to ring or signal you that that they're calling. We're ready for argument when you are. Before you start, counsel, we have both father and mother represented here by different counsel, it appears. Have you agreed on how you're going to split your 15 minutes? All right. Well, the responsibility will be on both on you to watch the time, unless you want me to precisely advise you when you have the exact. All right. We're ready for argument.
May it please the court, my name is Larry Holtis. I am the appointed counsel for JD in this matter. I know the court has indicated that it's not necessary to rehash the factual issues of the case. However, I think in this instance, it bears some of the facts bear repeating because it hinges on our interpretation of the seminal case of in the interest of MM and our argument in the brief.
Before you start, just make sure I have all the children lined up properly. RD and J and JR are the children of CR, the mother, and also RD is the son of
The two parents.
Of the father.
Actually, the youngest child, I believe, is, if I recall, is the joint efforts of our clients.
Yes, and the three children, AD, SD, and RD, who are the were the father's petitioning appeal, are now in the, as I understand the record, in the hands of their mother in California. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And RD and JR, the children of the mother, are where?
They are with foster placement in Archuleta County.
Thank you. I just wanted to get all that straightened out.
Thank you, Judge. Again, back to my the two issues we have are whether the treatment plan should have been amended to adequately address JD's problems leading to the dependency adjudication, and whether the court considered and eliminated less drastic alternatives to termination. The facts in January of 2006, a treatment plan was agreed to by the parties, by the Department of Human Services, and both JD and CR, the two parents. Between January of 2006 and July of 2006, the facts would indicate, despite the circumstances surrounding JD's disabilities, and just to, again, rehash, he was, he had post-traumatic stress disorder, severe diabetes with seizures, high blood pressure. Subsequently, as the petition indicates, he was diagnosed by Dr. Deborah Parker in association with this matter with narcissistic personality disorder. And admittedly, there was indications of substance abuse at that time. In a period of 6 months, the Department of Human Services just basically determined that it was a non-correctable situation. Now, we've got a lot of time in between September of 2006 and when the termination hearings occurred, and I understand the directives of the case authority and the children's code as far as the best interest of the children in determining how long this should occur, particularly where you have children as young as these are. In this instance, the facts show that my client made every attempt to seek assistance under the treatment plan, in some instances unsuccessfully. His counsel at the time requested an amendment. In fact, he was attempting to comply in August by being evaluated by Dr. Parker. They had moved away in a factual basis to obtain services in Albuquerque from the VA clinic. He was on a VA disability. He was unemployable at the time. And that was over that period of time. I've recited what in-house procedures he'd gone through the VA clinics. We submitted it, but the department determined that they were not acceptable in the sense that he had not cleared the treatment programs with the department prior to his taking them. We submitted evidence at the trial court level. Unfortunately, we were not able to subpoena any particular providers from the VA because they would not cooperate.
Mr. Holder, yeah. Basically, with all of JD's difficulties and problems, basically he was on drugs, wasn't he?
He indicated he was, yes. We can't deny that.
Isn't that a fundamental fact in this whole business?
It was. It was one of the issues, obviously. Yeah. And the fact was at that point in time, because he was to a certain extent department extended assistance, and to a certain extent from my client's perspective, it was not there. He had requested certain things. He got crosswise with the department, and that was the long and the short of it. Now I mentioned the length of time that has occurred between the original filing of the petition and the adjudication of the dependency, and the length of the treatment plan. And I quote people in the interest of MM, which the Supreme Court says that indicates that in considering the appropriateness of a treatment plan, and an amendment of to such appropriateness must be evaluated by examining the likelihood of success in accomplishing its purpose, and most importantly, must be assessed in the light of facts existing at the time of its adoption. Now, in that sense, there was only a six-month period before the filing of the motion for termination. The narcissistic personality disorder was only brought forth in the August and July evaluation by Dr. Parker. In the response to the motion for termination, the counsel for JD at the time requested an update, and then in 2007 he motioned the court for an updated treatment plan in order to accomplish some of the things that were done. In our estimation, the indigency question is foremost, because even to visit the children, they had to come up with $20 to be drug tested. And a lot of times they didn't have that. They had to scrounge money from the local diocese in Pagosa Springs to be able to get, to have money to get back to where they were living in New Mexico at the time.
Doesn't the record indicate, Mr. Holtis, that gasoline vouchers were provided when asked?
They were at certain points, but then they were refused later on, and I don't know the exact timeframe in 2006 where that occurred. But at one point in time, that stopped. A lot of the cooperation stopped.
Would the amendments that you're talking about have ameliorated the primary problem that Justice Rivera identified, which was the drug addiction?
The amendments, it could have been fine-tuned. It could have been an in-house program that was paid for and provided by the department, for instance.
Well, my question is, the original treatment plan required Father to become drug-free, did it not?
That's correct.
And the amendment did not seek to modify that to say he doesn't need to be drug-free.
No. No, I don't think the amendment would have sought more assistance in attempting, again, financially, they had no wherewithal to check into a year program.
How could the department have provided services in Albuquerque, which is where where JD had moved?
It was never addressed by the court because they denied, and I don't recall whether that was actually addressed in the ruling on the 2007 motion for amendment, but that was not addressed.
My point is, I guess the problem I'm having is, what was the amendment request going to do? Was it going to authorize New Mexico Public Services people to become engaged and be paid for? Or what was it that exactly it was going to change to the benefit of JD?
Ms. Swanye is going to address that, I believe, in the ICPC portion of that. I don't want to take too much of her time.
Okay.
It's going to be addressed on her recitation in a second. But
okay. I might point out you only have 5 minutes left.
I understand, and that's what I wanted. Thank you.
All right.
May it please the court, my name is Shannon Swanye, bar number 35278. The primary issue, and I'm the attorney for CR, the appellant mother, who is an indigent, disabled military veteran who at all times throughout these proceedings was a permanent resident of New Mexico. The primary issue that I wish to address to the court today is whether the Archuleta County Department of Human Services adopted an appropriate treatment plan. This court has ruled that the appropriateness of a treatment plan must be measured against the factors which existed at the time of the adoption of the plan and must be evaluated by its success in reuniting the family. Here, the treatment plan was inappropriate at the time it was adopted because it was unlikely to succeed in reuniting the family because the department failed to initiate the ICPC process, the Interstate Compact on the Placement of Children.
Didn't all this start in Pagosa Springs or Durango?
Your Honor, it started in Pagosa Springs. However, when the treatment plan was adopted, the appellants were already living in New Mexico. The appellant returned to New Mexico.
Where were the children?
In Pagosa Springs. That's why the IC.
How many miles is that between Pagosa Springs and Albuquerque?
Well, they originally moved to Chama, New Mexico, which I'm not sure of mileage, but it's about a two-hour round trip. It's less than 60 miles each way, but mountains, so takes a little bit longer.
Ms. Swanye, as I understand it, the parties negotiated the terms of the treatment plan. Is that incorrect?
Your Honor, it's not my understanding that that is what happened. This was a court-ordered treatment plan, and I believe that the appellants submitted to the treatment plan. I was not the attorney at the time. However, I believe they submitted because they were given no other choice.
Would it matter if that was negotiated among the various parties and agreed to? I understand it was made an order of the court. But if it was agreed to by both mother and father, doesn't that blunt your argument that it was inappropriate?
Your Honor, that's a possibility. However, I'm not sure that it was agreed to, and I don't think that the appellants in this case had much bargaining power. Unequal bargaining power is what I would state.
Were they represented by counsel?
At the time, I believe so, Your Honor, yes.
So wasn't the bargaining power equalized if they had counsel and the state had counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
So the unequal bargaining power doesn't see the whole water, does it?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
The appellant returned to New Mexico in November of 2006, and the treatment plan was adopted in January of 2007. So at the time of the adoption of the treatment plan, the department knew that the appellants were living in New Mexico. They were only temporarily in Colorado. They've always been permanent residents of New Mexico, continue to have permanent New Mexico driver's licenses. The ICPC process is governed by 12 CCR 25094, and Section 7.307.32 states that procedures shall be followed when a child is in the custody of a county department or under the jurisdiction of a court in one state and considered for placement with his or her parents in another state. The permanency goal of the treatment plan was to return home. Therefore, the ICPC process should have been followed because the return home would have been to another state. And ICPC is mandatory. It says that the procedure shall be followed, not that they may be followed. The treatment plan required that the appellant travel to Pagosa Springs 3 to 4 times a week in order to complete the treatment plan. Like I said, 60 miles each way, it's about 480 miles a week. And when you're indigent, disabled, this is a hardship. And therefore—
Let me follow up with Judge Caseville's question. Wasn't there gas vouchers?
At times, but not always.
Not always.
No, Your Honor.
Whose fault was that?
And I'm not sure whose fault it was. The gas vouchers were only for the visits. There were other requirements.
My question was, whose fault was it? Did CR apply for the gas vouchers or ask for them and was refused, or what happened?
I believe that there were different reasons each time. At times, they had to work for them, and there wasn't always work available. They had worked in a thrift store.
Had to work for them.
They had to work in the thrift store of the church, I believe, the donation.
In which church?
A Methodist church,
Where?
I believe. In Pagosa Springs.
In order, they had to work, the part of the plan was that they had to work in a thrift store of the church in Pagosa Springs in order to get gas vouchers?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
My time is up.
Thank you. Hello.
May it please the court. My name is Jerry Van, and I represent the Archuleta County Department of Human Services. When I'll refer to, instead of the appellee, I'll refer to the department rather than appellee throughout my argument. Addressing the first issue, was the treatment plan appropriate because it did not adequately address the problems leading to the dependency adjudication? Well, I think the answer clearly is it was appropriate. Without belaboring the point, the cases, and I'm referring to the same in the interest of MM case that Mr. Holtis referred to, an appropriate treatment plan in this context means a plan which is reasonably calculated to render the particular respondent fit to provide adequate parenting to the child within a reasonable time and which is relative to the child's needs.
Purpose Van, of the,
yes.
Let me follow up with Judge Caseville's question.
Yes.
Was the agreement entered into between the parties and the department?
Yes, it was. Both parties were represented by attorneys at that time, and both parties had essentially had input into that treatment plan. And that treatment plan came before the trial judge, and the trial judge approved it. So I think the parties, if the attorneys for the parties didn't agree to the treatment plan or felt it was inappropriate, they could have raised that issue at that time. They did not raise that issue. And in fact, as the record indicates, CR didn't raise that issue until June of 2008, just before her hearing on termination was to start. So that treatment plan was in effect for at least 2.5 years, no objection to it until June, at least no objection from CR until June of 2008.
Was there any objection from JD?
JD made an objection very early on, I think around July of 2007, I think. But again, that was heard. They had an opportunity to bring their arguments before the court. It was heard by the court, and that motion was denied. Denied for a number of reasons, but and I can cover that. But it was way too premature. That's one thing. Way too premature at that point to say that the treatment plan was inappropriate and needed to be updated. JD had really not made any real effort to comply with it, and as the record indicates, never really made any effort, any real effort to comply with it.
Would you agree that at the time the treatment plan was approved, that the parents were already in New Mexico?
I think that's true, but there's a really important point here. These people were mother and father living in Pagosa Springs, living in a three-bedroom home. By their admission, the rent was paid. The father had a job in nearby town for one of the tribes, and he was basically a counselor. As the trial judge said, inexplicably, the minute they got out of jail, they were taken to jail when the children were taken into custody back in October of 2005. They were taken to jail. Immediately upon their release of jail, they left. And they went, and I would disagree with Ms. Soignier, they went roughly 45 minutes south of Pagosa Springs into New Mexico. I could draw all kinds of inferences from the record as to why they left.
But my understanding of her argument is the very fact that they were already out of state at the time the treatment plan was approved means that the procedures for referral under the ICPC provisions had to be followed and were not. That should have been part of the treatment plan.
I don't agree with that. I can't immediately cite the terms of the ICPC, but I think one of the things the court has to remember, this was a situation in limbo. The department expected that at some point they would either come back to Pagosa Springs or from this very close location that they would come to Pagosa Springs to take advantage of all of the services, including treatments, assessments, treatments, aftercare, help with employment, a number of other services, life skills services, all of which were available to them there. I don't think, and again, when you look at the fact that the issue of ICPC wasn't raised until 2.5 years later, June 2nd of 2008, just before the first hearing was to start on June 25th, and those children had been in foster care for close to 3 years by that time. It would have been a tragedy to, at that point, uproot them and send them to another foster care home somewhere in New Mexico. The choice to move here was the choice of the parents. They had every ability, it seems to me, to stay in Pagosa Springs near their children, take advantage of all the services that I mentioned. They chose to leave. They arbitrarily left And then they moved farther away, and ultimately they moved 200 miles away. And then they came into court 2.5 years later and said, you ought to do an ICPC so the children are closer to us, so accommodate us. And again, after 2.5 years with these children in a foster home, where they were thriving, where they were, the oldest ones were going to school, where they were bonding with the father and mother that they, the foster father and mother, it would have been a terrible disruption, totally contrary to the case law in terms of the best interest of the children. So that's why the Department of Human Services essentially made short shrift of that argument.
Mr. Van,
yes.
Can you, and I know you said you're not familiar intimately with the provisions of the ICPC, but counsel has quoted a section that she asserts requires certain procedures to be followed when the ICPC is invoked. Do you know if the ICPC has any waiver provisions or any time limits as far as when its provisions must be invoked?
I honestly don't, Your Honor. I have read it through once in connection with another case that I dealt with. And I don't want to make excuses. I just started with the Department of Human Services in January of this year.
Would it be your position that common law waiver would nevertheless apply when it took 2.5 years for this issue to be raised?
I definitely would, Your Honor. I definitely would. As far as the appropriateness of the treatment plan, it seems to me, and I'm not going to reiterate, Your Honors, I'm sure have read the decision of the trial court, the children in this case were in a, what I would say, horrible, horrible situation, literally living in squalor, the parents and the children living in squalor, with two parents that had serious, serious cocaine dependencies. And as far as the appropriateness of the treatment plan, the department essentially set up five objectives, and in the order of importance said you've got to get into some kind of rehabilitative program with respect to your cocaine addiction. You've got to visit regularly with your children. You can't just lose contact with them. You've got to visit them regularly, and once a week visits were set up on a regular basis for them to attend. There was domestic violence in the home, and part of the treatment plan was for them to address domestic violence through some sort of classes. They needed to maintain employment, and they needed to have a stable home. As it turned out, even though they claim that they did some of the things independently on their own down in New Mexico that complied with the treatment plan, it was a very minimal compliance. The statute says you have to substantially comply with the treatment plan. They, I would say again, giving them the benefit of the doubt, they minimally applied at least as far as the drug addiction item was concerned. But the bottom line being, in the end, before their respective hearings, termination hearings were conducted, they had both continued to use cocaine. There was ample evidence in the record that, for example, with respect to JD, within 2 months, maybe 3 months at the most of his hearing, he continued to use cocaine. His CR even confirmed that they smoked together, that they did lines of cocaine. They continued to use crack cocaine, again, right up to the time of the hearing, and CR as well. CR admitted time and time again that she had not been able to kick the habit, and she was still seriously using at the time of her termination hearing. As far as the visits, again, I would take issue with Ms. Soignier, but for approximately 2 years, 18 months in Chama, New Mexico, just 45 minutes south of Pagosa Springs, and then another 7 months in Tierra Amarilla, which is only about 1 hour from Pagosa Springs. Their attendance, their efforts to see their children were just meager. And the judge, the trial judge, has outlined, we've outlined in our brief, just how poor it was. Many of those visits were canceled because they tested positive for cocaine. JD frequently, and it's in the record and it's in the judge's decision, frequently drove to Pagosa Springs, dropped CR off, and drove away, and then would come back for her at the end of the visit. Again, time and again, disappointing the children, frustrating the children, to the point where the oldest daughter in mid-2007 refused to see her father anymore. And from mid-2007 to date, she's never agreed and never has seen her father again. And as was pointed out earlier, the two older children are with their birth mother in California at this time. And the two youngest children, the foster parents, have indicated that they wish to adopt those two children. And again, the conclusion that I think the court has to come to here is that it wasn't an inappropriate treatment plan. It was an appropriate treatment plan. It simply was not adhered to by either parent. They essentially failed miserably, and they failed their children miserably.
Mr. Van, would you comment briefly on the gasoline vouchers? We've heard argument that gasoline vouchers were only available to the parties if they worked somehow for them.
I know there were instances where the local Methodist Church in Pagosa Springs did provide vouchers. I believe they provided vouchers at times when the parents didn't work. There were other times when they basically said, if you'll work in the thrift store across the street from the church, we'll give you a gas voucher.
How much time was required to work, if you know?
I honestly don't know. I have to say I don't know. As far as the last issue, whether the appellants basically state that the district court erred because it didn't consider less restrictive alternatives. The department's position is, and we've, as stated in the case of, in the interest of MM, cited in our brief, the Supreme Court of Colorado has said that we are satisfied that as long as the trial court's findings conform to the statutory criteria for termination and are adequately supported by evidence in the record, a reviewing court may reasonably presume that in the absence of any indication in the record to the contrary, the trial court considered and eliminated the less drastic alternatives.
Mr. Van, your time is expiring. I'm sorry, sir. We appreciate your argument. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all, counsel, for your arguments today. The case will stand submitted. We'll get you a